Welcome to the Unconventional Dyad Podcast, where psychology and psychoanalysis meet social justice, feminism, politics, climate change, critical theory, graduate student mental health, and the arts.
Your hosts are Carly and Laura, two graduate students and friends committed to bridging the gap between the field of psychology, social issues, and society.
Thank you for joining us. Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of the Unconventional Dyad Podcast. Today we speak with Jeremiah Lindman, a product engineer with Esri working in the geospatial industry based in Colorado. He spends much of his time supporting health and human services and public safety agencies. His career has helped him to be an advocate after a personal loss of his brother to opioids, mapping various opioid topics and helping people tell their stories of loss. More recently, similar mapping around loss and vaccinations has been applied to COVID-19 with the assistance of GIS Corps, a nonprofit volunteer organization. Topics of discussion on today's episode include the COVID-19 mapping online and the three maps that Jer has been working on recently, which are the lost loved ones, vaccination experiences, and recovery stories. We talk about Jer's past work with mapping the opioid crisis and the parallels between that crisis and the current pandemic. And we also talk about how mapping impacts the grieving process and encourages empathy. Lastly, we discuss the use of maps to bridge the gap between the isolated individual to the community at large, bringing awareness to what is occurring within neighborhoods. We really enjoyed this episode today, and we hope that you enjoy it just as much as we did. Thanks for being here. Jer, thank you so much for joining us on the Unconventional Dyad Podcast. We're excited to talk to you today.
Thank you so much for having me, Laura and Carly.
Absolutely. Why don't we start off by you introducing yourself to our listeners?
Okay. I'm Jeremiah Lindman. I go by Jer often. I live in Colorado with my wife and two kids, or 12 and 14-year-old daughters. I grew up in a small town in South Dakota, went to school in Wyoming. From there, I went to, straight out of college, my grad school, went to work for Esri, which is where I still work almost 20 years later. So I did a little bit of time in California, and then fortunate enough, they moved me back a little bit closer to where I'm comfortable with in Colorado. So love what Colorado has to offer, with the mountains. We go camping a lot in the summer and, take our dogs and sports and kids keep us busy. That's a little bit of background about myself. As far as me professionally, I work with Esri. We do basically mapping software. So a pretty big company that does all sorts of, we make the software that people use to do mapping and analysis. I'm pretty busy working with public safety and health for the most part, and been really busy this last year, especially with COVID. And really helping, especially public health agencies. You've probably seen a lot of different maps and so forth have come out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, talk to us a little bit about the COVID mapping that you do. That's initially why we reached out to you, and we were very curious about some of that work. Do you mind speaking about that?
Yeah, sure thing. So I guess, on my day job, we've been busy just mapping all sorts of things. So there's the maps that came out first is just the response, like where are the cases and, what counties are, doing worse than others, and, states and counties were doing that. And then that just kind of kept on evolving into, where are their deaths and where are their resources? So where do people go and where are the hospitalizations? And so there's all sorts of mapping that, you can think about any type of data point. So that kept us, has kept us busy over this year, and, especially leading into vaccines and as businesses are reopening. So there's a lot of things that, especially a local county or state governments interested in mapping just around this topic, for sure. And I think we've all seen those maps on the news. I think what has led me to you is just kind of a little bit of a side project is I worked in helping set up a map that allows people to submit a lost loved one that they've lost to COVID. So made a form where people can fill out information about someone that they lost, and that will appear on a map. So you get a map with, there's a map where you can see where these lives have been lost, but then on the side of the map there are pictures. So you can really kind of make that identity to who's being lost and click on each picture and see a bio that the family has written about them. So that was a bit of a side project working with a kind of a side organization called GIS Corps. They're a volunteer nonprofit that they host the map and they approve the submissions as they come in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think are the benefits of doing this kind of mapping? I was really fascinated by it when I saw it, and it really touched me in a deep way to see these pictures and see these points on the map. What do you think the impact of that kind of mapping has?
Well, I think it's great because, you know, we're coming up, you know, about a year and being in this pandemic, and, you know, what I've done in my day job, helping these cities and or the counties and state departments map deaths and, you know, map cases. We see all these maps and we've seen all these charts and graphs everywhere. And it's almost that we've seen them too much. Like, we've become a little bit desensitized to them, right? I mean, they're on the news every night, right? So we're all used to this data and just streaming data. And it's easy to lose sight that behind each individual data point, there's a story, there's a person. You know, when you're talking about a death, that's, it's a person that's been lost, a whole family that is, you know, mourning that person. So I think it might, you know, since we become desensitized a bit just to seeing all this influx of data, it can help us bring us back a little bit to say, hey, there's real stories. And I guess the other benefit is, you know, there's a lot of people that have lost people and they want to share that story, you know, especially over this last year where, you know, people haven't really been able to have, you know, typical funerals and you know, a way someone might normally grieve. And it's a way that they can, you know, maybe, you know, help share the legacy and carry those stories on a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm wondering too about the impact that this kind of mapping has on the grieving process and on the mourning process for people. Have you given any thought to that, how maps might impact grief?
Yeah, I mean, quite a bit. You know, just looking on social media, you know, just with like the kind of the typical maps that we're all used to of, you know, if you see a map and you see, or a chart and you see deaths, I've seen a lot of families will say, yeah, my, you know, my dad was one of those, my grandma was one of those. And, you know, I think people kind of inherently make that point back. But as far as, you know, the lost loved ones map and you're having that story, you know, the families that have added the loved ones, I think they have this just inherent need and desire to make sure their loved one's not forgotten. They want to share the story, right? I mean, there's, especially in this year where everything's so weird and, you know, everyone's locked down and locked inside. In many ways, they lose someone and they go through something rather traumatic and they don't really feel like that story has been told. You know, they didn't have a funeral, but they haven't also, you know, been able to, you know, maybe perhaps, you know, talk to other people and grieve as much as they want. So, you know, it's not, you know, something that's going to totally cure that, but it's some way that, you know, can maybe just, you know, give a little bit of a branch to help, you know, tell those stories a bit.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. One thing you mentioned in one of your emails, in our email correspondence prior to us recording this interview, is you talked about how a lot of times people tend to minimize the deaths, like other people who have maybe not lost someone to this pandemic, like, oh, it's, you know, it's older people or it's people with underlying medical conditions. And there's like a minimization of human life. And I've been thinking about that a lot and how putting a face to those data points, like you said, maybe hopefully might change that a little bit. So there isn't as much minimization, but I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that specific point.
Yeah, and there's definitely a stigma, and I mean, I think there's a whole bunch of reasons why people have said that, you know, and they've minimized the deaths, and I think there's people that just didn't want this pandemic to, you know, acknowledge that it is really happening, you know, or they didn't want it to impact their life. But it's hard when, you know, people are on the other end and losing that, and losing someone that, you know, that it's pretty dismissive. And in many ways, it's a kind of a big slap in the face to people. You know, it's, I think, you know, there can be plenty of disagreements in the world about how maybe the pandemic gets handled, but it is pretty sad to just see this pure lack of empathy, that's, you know, and you know, people are not acknowledging, you know, that there's great people being lost and there's people suffering from that. Hopefully, yeah, you know, you get the more stories out there and that can maybe help with that specific issue.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Something that's coming to mind for me is just the, when you're working with the programs that you work with, so ArcGIS, you're working with a ton of data, you're trying to really figure out, you know, just the data in general, patterns and whatnot. And I'm just kind of wondering what your process is like when you actually start realizing that each of those data points is a human being, and what that realization is, or if you've experienced anything within yourself and you actually start realizing that these are real people and you're actually mapping people's lives.
Yeah, you know, maybe this is just kind of, well, back up a little bit and talk about some of my experiences that kind of led me into mm-hmm. this is, so I unfortunately lost my little brother JT to an opioid overdose. Is over a dozen years ago now. And that obviously was probably the most impactful thing that's ever happened in my life. You know, losing someone that was really my best man at my wedding and such an instrumental part of my life. You know, he'd you know, went through rehab, and we'd known that it was happening for a while. It was actually one of the reasons why I moved out from California to get back a little closer to home. But it's still very traumatic just to, you know, have that sudden loss of life. So just like the COVID lost loved ones map, I was really quiet for a long time. You know, it's not easy to say, yeah, I lost my brother to an overdose, but it got to be in the news so much that you know, people were dying. And it's really the same story as COVID, that you'd start to see these stories and, you know, start to be once every couple of weeks that, you know, the opiate epidemic, and starting to realize that, you know, my brother was a fatality and something much bigger. And you're again starting to see some numbers come out on these news reports. And I started to do some personal mapping of, I was just making some animated maps. I started in Colorado getting data from the health department of how each county went up from year to year to year. And basically it went from light red to dark red in most of the counties. And just looking at the numbers that were going up, you know, from like the early 2000s to, you know, probably the 2015 or so when I started. So I started kind of the same approach, you know, tactical, hey, let's try and make awareness. I got hooked up with some groups that the governor had in Colorado that were starting to have like a kind of response group. I met some other families that are, you know, kind of in my position, and another mom that said, you know, we need some way to celebrate these lives and show that they're really people. And that's really kind of where it started. And, you know, we made a opioid lost loved ones map. It's really the same exact idea to do that. And that one is, you know, even though it started a few years ago, it has over a few thousand people on it. I worked with the National Safety Council to, you know, kind of give it more of an authoritative home they now host it, since they do a lot of opiate work. But that was kind of the way that I went into this, is really to attach these deaths to some human lives, and quickly found that, you know, people want to tell these stories, you know, a few thousand people that we're kind of trying to break down the stigma. There's just like the, you know, Laura, you mentioned that, you know, the stigma around COVID, there's definitely lots of stigma around, you know, drug use, and there's just a bunch of druggies, and, you know, they made their choice, and trying to break down that there's really great people being lost and there's families behind those. So I guess, you know, when COVID hit, you know, and we were, the whole idea of mapping deaths came about, I guess it was something that I was already a little bit versed in, and kind of wanted, you know, recognize that there was a correlation and there was a bigger story to be told.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's such important work. And thank you for doing that work and sharing your story. I think we need more of that for sure. One thing that I'm thinking about a lot is, so we're clinical psychology students, we're getting our doctorates in psychology, and in our training, you know, we work with individuals in therapy and we provide therapy. And I think a lot about what the purpose of therapy is. And I think about how a lot of times we're lifting the veil on things that people kind of want to keep buried or hidden. And I'm just really fascinated by the parallels between that kind of work and what you're doing. Like, it really feels like you're lifting the veil on things that society doesn't really want to think about or wants to keep hidden away. So it's really fascinating work and it's really important. So thank you for doing that.
Oh yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, I think therapy's hugely important. That veil was something I didn't want to lift on myself for a long time. Right. I mean, I kept it in and I didn't talk to anyone, you know. I think everyone grieves differently, obviously. And I think you're mm-hmm. probably well more aware of that, but I was very quiet about it for several years. And, you know, I think therapy is great. But I think for me, just to even get it out there and talk about it as a bigger picture, letting other people share their stories, it was also kind of meaningful for me to, like, you know, talk about my brother and, you know, actually for the first time to start to talk about it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm thinking too of the population. So Laura and I both worked at a substance use treatment center. And I'm thinking about the stories that people bring in about being ostracized from society, feeling like they don't quite fit in. These addictions can really ostracize people. And I'm just imagining how much, you know, giving them a story, giving them, you know, something on that map. To me, that just seems so revealing and mm-hmm. really giving them a face and giving them a story. And it saddens me hearing just the stories of these people when they're in treatment and feeling like, you know, their family, you know, wasn't supportive of them and et cetera for various reasons. But the idea of them giving them a story, I think, is just so powerful, and giving them a face is so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, stigma is huge. And, you know, I think, you know, selfishly, you know, I can talk about stigma of just, you know, being someone that survived losing a little brother. And I think, you know, families face stigma, but the much more important stigma is the people that are going through it. And, you know, as long as that stigma wall is up there, it's like for them to, you know, get help that, you know, many times that they want, but it's, you know, getting, you know, the ability to seek out the help that they might want is a challenge oftentimes because of the stigma, for sure.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, Jared, how you take care of yourself doing this kind of work, because I imagine it can be really emotionally taxing.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I started this opiate work, it's probably, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. And I went all in for like a couple of years and I did it. I had to really put the brakes on for a while. That's one of the reasons why I actually got a fellowship. I was working with another nonprofit in DC, which they kind of help amplify the voice. And it was just kept on growing. And I was working a lot with cities and counties. It's one of the reasons why I did work with the National Safety Council to kind of take it on, because, you know, I was putting that map out there and like all these families were like sharing a lot more with me, and it was great. I mean, it was good to, you know, like they needed an outlet, but at the same time, it got to be a bit exhausting. So mm-hmm. I really took probably, you know, a couple of years almost where I just like said, I need to stop and, you know, really kind of stop a little bit at this, you know, so it was exhausting, you know, as far as taking care of myself. Yeah. I think, you know, it was, doing other things like, you know, running and getting outdoors and, you know, kind of those kind of things I think were useful for me, for sure. But mm-hmm. yeah, it was exhausting for sure. But I think it kind of comes in waves too. You know, I think I'm, you know, kind of getting ready to kind of reapproach some of that stuff because it's getting worse. So I hit the brakes, but maybe I'm going to work on a little bit more for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I was wondering too about, like, I know some of the other maps on the website, the COVID maps on the website focus more on like recovery stories and vaccination stories. And I'm wondering if some of that offsets the harder stuff with the deaths, or Do you do any work on the recovery stories and the vaccination stories?
Yeah, I mean, I set up all those maps, so like I can help set up the you know, the technology for them. Yeah, so there was a, right when we did the lost loved ones for COVID map, we someone had the idea of, I think it was within JS Core, to have a recovery map, and that one just never really took off for whatever reason. I think people were more drawn to the lost loved ones. But more recently, we have a chief medical officer, Desiree, and it was her idea to do the vaccination story map. And I thought that was great. You know, it's more of a, you know, positive spin. And I think that's how I met you, Laura, you know, myself and a couple other people from JS Core. Every now and then I get a Twitter account and, you know, kind of, I think we should follow someone that, you know, maybe share their vaccine story if they follow back, trying to get them to share the story. But yeah, I think in this time that, you know, everyone's been, you know, so locked down for a while and people are ready to kind of return back to, you know, whatever normal is, and that there's a kind of hope. There's been a lot of people on social media sharing their vaccine story. So it's kind of a positive spin on that. So yeah, I'm really excited to see that one go and help that get out there for sure. You know, we did something, you know, similar to the, you know, overdose. There is a recovery map as well. That one didn't quite take off. You know, it has several dozen people, but I think, you know, people are obviously just a little bit more, you know, hesitant for various reasons, you know, with employers and things like that, and, you know, sharing those stories, I think. But I like to definitely see, you know, the positive, you know, spin and whatever we can do to, you know, help encourage that.
Yeah. What do you hope the vaccination map, what kind of effects do you hope that vaccination map might have? Or have you thought through that? Like what kind of impact it would have on a larger scale?
Well, yeah, I mean, so I guess the one hope initially was to, and we're still doing this, that I think it's still kind of early on. Sometimes they take a while to take off, is that maybe a more focused community, you know, like one specific city might really grasp onto it and kind of tailor it towards, you know, maybe embed it in their website and use it as more promotional to kind of help get stories out and really encourage vaccinations. So I think that's kind of the one root goal of that, is to really help, you know, people, because there's, you know, several studies that show, you know, we're not going to really get out of this unless, you know, certain percentage of people, you know, near 70% of people get vaccinated. Mm-hmm. So if it could just be another tool, another instrument to maybe help people, and especially like when, I think one of the things compelling about all these maps that have the faces on them is that people are much more inclined to pay attention when it's in their neighborhood, mm-hmm. right? So they'll typically, just like, you know, when Google Maps came out, people zoom into their house first. Well, if people zoom into their city and say, they see other people got vaccinated and they're maybe a little bit on edge, maybe it might help say, okay, yeah, this, maybe I should do this. So that was one goal of it. The other is really just to, you know, as I said earlier, just to have a time of hope and, you know, let people are excited to share their story. So it's, you know, get it out there.
Yeah, I really am interested in research around sustainability and like what kind of psychological approaches we can use to help people live a more sustainable or a more green life. Like I'm very passionate about things like climate change. And what you just said about, you know, people zooming into their neighborhoods made me think of that, because I've read research that if more people in your community are, if you see that people in your community are recycling or that they have solar panels on their house, you're also more likely to engage in that kind of behavior. So I do think you're spot on with that, with, you know, when people see that their neighbors are getting vaccinated and they maybe see pictures of people's faces. Like I know on that map, I shared my own picture on that map, and seeing other people's faces just has such a huge impact, and it can have a collective impact, I think, to promote positive change.
Yeah, definitely. I think that, you know, what around you will definitely propel you. I think it's just been the same story, you know, when it comes to breaking down stigma, you know, someone that, you know, maybe, you know, would say something that's, you know, falls in that stigma category, but if they zoom in and they start to see, oh, you know, maybe there's real people that, you know, like right where I go to school, you know, that might change your mind. But yeah, same idea with the vaccinations. And I think right now it's, you know, it's on such limited supply that everyone that's getting vaccinated really, really want it. But, you know, in a month or two from now, you know, maybe that those stories are going to be, you know, much more important to someone. That might be a little bit more on, you know, wavering whether or not to get a vaccine.
I was just going to say, something I've been thinking about is, you know, the importance of maps in general. And, you know, it's just, to me, it just amazes me that people have a really hard time grasping someone's experience, someone's life, kind of the population as a whole. But when it's mapped, it's much easier to grasp. And I don't know if you have any thoughts about this as someone who actually makes the maps. And I don't know if you think about really what that does to someone when they're actually looking at the map. But this idea that there's a like you're living with people, you're in a collective, there's other people in your community. The map itself just is so powerful. It's such a powerful thing.
Yeah, it's that whole not in my backyard concept.
Yeah.
I mean, anything that's, you know, bad happens, you know, there's not drug use in my neighborhood, or there's no COVID deaths where I am. That's, you know, it's people have that mentality, you know, that they do not want to be infected by, impacted by something that, you know, might be potential negative or have to alter their way of life. But, you know, even before the faces, yeah, the maps that just show anything that's happening in their neighborhood, people always look what's around them first, right? So I think that's why, you know, people are drawn to maps, is if it's close to you, then you're going to think a little bit more about it.
Yeah. I'm wondering too how like this might encourage more empathy from people, because what you said, Carly, about how, you know, people can't really seem to take other people's perspectives, or they don't really understand where other people are coming from unless they really see it in their backyard. Like, I wonder how this kind of work, this kind of mapping might actually increase empathy among people. I mean, I'm hopeful that it does. And I think there's a real possibility that it does, which is exciting.
Yeah, you know, empathy's, you know, I guess a funny thing. There's definitely problems in our society with it. I don't think, you know, I'm going to suddenly teach someone that's, you know, my age in their 40s to have empathy. But I do think it can definitely change the mind of, you know, especially younger people, you know, that, you know, might catch themselves saying something or you know, falling into that category for sure. And I think there's a lot of room that, you know, hopefully, you know, change some of that mindset for sure.
Yeah. Definitely. I did want to touch on another link you shared with me before we recorded this interview. You said you've been having some conversations with George Washington University, and there's like an art installation online about COVID-19. Do you mind talking about that and what kind of impact that's had on you?
Oh yeah, so this is just something I found out about a week ago, and I guess it kind of falls into the same category of grief and with COVID. So you may have, and I actually saw this on the national news, is back in November, outside like RFK Stadium, the football stadium in DC. There's a big lawn, and they were putting up a bunch of white flags for basically marking people that have passed away from COVID. And this is all done by an artist, Suzanne, I forgot her last name, but she's done a lot of work, and she's actually done some stuff on Overdose as well, some art installations. But this flag memorial actually had a lot of politicians kind of walk through, and they were kind of doing some, you know, photo, you know, ops with it as well. And so it made some national news, and there's some stories. Well, she worked with some folks at George Washington University who are basically taking this and digitizing it. So you kind of have this map now of all these flags. You can zoom into that same location. And they're also encouraging people to basically add a flag, you know, if you lost someone, to kind of add that. So it's a way they're keeping that living. And then some talks about, you know, how do we tie that to the other lost loved ones map and kind of the more real map. So yes, it's just conversations that come up. Actually, just before I was talking with you, I was talking with them as well. They're getting ready to do a little bit more of a press release on that next week, because, you know, we're coming up on a lot of year, and the U.S. is also about ready to cross, you know, 500,000 deaths. So I thought it was just another interesting way to, you know, show that there's griefs and the grieving process, and each flag, you know, basically represents a family. And I think initially those flags were planted by like a lot of Facebook grieving groups and so forth, from what she was saying. So just kind of another way, I guess, that they did something that had an impact that now they're trying to make digitally to kind of keep these stories running on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can definitely include a link to that and to your website, to your maps that you've worked on, in our show notes, so people can check that out.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about where you see your work going next, Jer. What do you think you're going to be tackling next? And do you have any sort of hopes for the future?
So as far as going next, you know, I had this day job, and we've been doing a lot of this COVID response, and we've been doing some vaccine work, and I'm not sure where that's going to go. I've been very fortunate with Esri, and it's been good that I've been able to kind of almost weave in and I kind of head this direction in supporting health and you know, public safety. We are going to do some more work with local governments, and in some ways this is work that I was almost kind of just researching on my own out of interest, but since it is such a big topic, going to be looking at helping more public health agencies with the opioid work later this year as well. And you know, a lot of that is just you know, mapping where things are to make awareness, but also trying to hope into weave in to make really better decisions. You know, I think there's a lot of discussion about, you know, lack of resources, and just like you were talking about, you know, with therapy, and like where do people need help? Where is that help not even available? You know, there's probably parallels to, you know, where things like overdoses are happening. So providing some tools that will hopefully help communities work with that. So I guess that's one thing that they'll be working on a little bit more. The COVID stuff, yeah, I'm not really sure. You know, we'll see where the vaccine map goes and what's going to happen with that.
Do you have any hopes for the future, or is it kind of difficult to find hope right now for you?
You know, I, as far as hope goes, yeah, definitely, you know, just along the same thread of empathy, I think hopefully that will just keep getting better. You know, it feels bad because, you know, it seems like there's a lot of polarization, especially in our country right now, where there, you know, you have it or you don't. But hopefully, you know, who knows what the future holds, but hopefully we can start to keep on telling some more of these stories and, you know, chip away at that and, you know, be ready when whatever the next big thing is hits, that, you know, if there's going to be something bad that happens, that we can kind of, you know, approach the human side of things a bit more as well. So, hoping for the, you know, the better in all different aspects and, you know, but, yeah, I think COVID's going to go down, but opiate stuff, I think we've got a lot of work to do on. You know, interestingly, the numbers have gone up on that with the pandemic. So, yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah,
I'm not all bleak by any means, I suppose, but yeah, so definitely have hope.
Yeah, I guess I'm wondering, because I'm imagining if I did this kind of work and I was faced with these data sets all the time and seeing these pictures all the time, I think I would probably struggle with hope a little bit, but it's nice to hear that you're still grounded in that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think inherently a lot of people that are sharing the stories are doing it from, you know, the good in their heart too. And they want to, you know, tell their story to make things better too. So
the work that you do, Jer, is just so cool. You really connect the individual to the community and to the society. And I just think that it's such a cool thing to see a connection being made. And I'm just amazed that a map or mapping or putting someone's stories within a map can do that. I just think it's amazing. And I'm still like in awe you are able to make the connection to the individual, to the society, and to the community. So I just think it's fantastic.
Cool. Well, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a lot of room with that, just within the whole tech industry for sure. But yeah, we'll see where all that goes. Hopefully it can keep on happening in some way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one last question for you before we wrap up today. I'm wondering if there's one lesson or one thing that you learned this year. If you can talk about that, and maybe how that's impacted you.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's maybe just I thought a little bit about that question, and maybe it, as it applies to the earlier opioid work, you know, beyond just the year or two. But I think one thing that's really kind of stuck out with a lot of these is the importance of community, and that word community. And I suppose I can take a couple different spins. You know, one is there's these communities that are just happening online. You know, what there are these grieving groups, and there's these communities that are happening where people want to share their story. So I think that's, you know, this kind of digital sense of community that's happening is interesting. But I think also more importantly, when it comes to that word community, it's almost the lack of community, and you know, maybe why we're here in some places. You know, in the opioid epidemic, there's a couple of really good books, and like it's called Dope Sick is one. Another one's Dreamland. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed they both hit on that topic. I was fortunate I've been able to talk to both of those authors a little bit. They really, you know, talked about, you know, just how things have changed so much. And, you know, part of it is, you know, us, our addiction to technology and so forth, that, mm-hmm. you know, that the community is not there. But I think it's something that can be applied to, you know, both these topics of, you know, both the opioid epidemic, but also, you know, COVID, you know, especially since people are more locked down now. And, you know, how in many ways maybe that community identity isn't there. Mm-hmm. And I've thought about that, you know, that, you know, what that means, and I don't know exactly what the solution is, but, you know, maybe, you know, how I think to maybe get things better, maybe we have to get back to that in some way. So I think that's a kind of a bigger discussion, but I guess that's one of the things that, because I don't have like a specific, you know, aha moment about, you know, like learning what that means, but that, I guess that's something that's, mm-hmm. it's just been a bit of an epiphany learning through all this, is that, how important that idea of community is through all this.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've been thinking about that a lot too, especially during the pandemic. Like I think the pandemic really shed light on how little community there is sometimes. And then it also highlighted some communities that I wasn't even aware of. You know, like there are pockets of people who are banding together and doing great work together. And I question, like, how do we have more of that? How do we encourage that? How do we shed more light on that if it is happening in our neighborhoods? Great. Well, do you have anything else that you want to share with our listeners, Jared?
No, I don't think so at this time. I know we kind of went around the world and a lot of different topics there, but yeah. Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I'm glad to talk about this stuff and see that these stories are getting out there for sure.
Yeah, thank you so much for the work you do. Seriously, it is so important. And I know Carly and I really appreciate it, and I can't imagine, you know, how much other people are appreciating it, especially those who have lost loved ones to the opioid crisis or the pandemic. So thank you very much.
Cool. Yeah, well, thank you. It'll be fun to watch where both of you go as well and on this podcast. It's great topics you're looking at.
Yeah, thanks for being with us, Jared.